On today's edition of Hoops 360, what are the biggest surprises of the WNBA season so far? Can the Lynx stay on top? Can the Liberty keep up their recent momentum? And will the Sparks turn things around after Kelsey Plum calls out her team? We also highlight the GOAT, the record breaker, Asia Wilson. Don't miss it. What is up, everybody? Welcome into Hoops 360. Cass is back with us today. She was covering the Women's College World Series in Oklahoma City. So, Cass, it's so wonderful to see your face and your voice. We've missed you.
I know, you too. Thanks for the shout out from both you and Kareem last week.
Kareem's the best. It was so fun to hang out with Kareem, as much as we missed you. Kareem Copeland hung out with us on the show last week, ESPN women's basketball writer. He did a fabulous breakdown on several teams. So if you missed that, you can find that on your preferred podcast platform and on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. But on today's edition of Hoops 360, which teams have surprised us in a good way and also in a bad way? Are we surprised that a Nafisa Collier-less Minnesota Lynx team just continues to win and they're on top of the entire league? How sustainable are the Wings and the Liberty's current win streaks? We are just about a quarter of the way through the season, and we're recording this podcast on Tuesday early afternoon. So just a heads up if you're listening to us a little bit later, and some of this might sound dated, but we are just about a quarter of the way through the season. So let's check in on some of our pregame predictions, how some of those teams have delivered so far. We've had some good surprises, maybe some unpleasant surprises just through this point in the season. But we have to start, I think, the best surprise of them all, or the biggest surprise maybe even, is the Minnesota Lynx. And we did our championship tiers going into the season, kind of who we predicted to be championship contenders. And we kind of put Minnesota right in that middle tier. Then if you said Collier recovering from injury, all of the players that the Minnesota Lynx lost this past offseason, no Natisha Heidemann, no Lotta Smith. They lost Bridget Carlton to Portland in the expansion draft. A lot of new pieces on this Minnesota squad. Yet here they are at the top of the standings at 9-2 with the best defensive team in the WNBA, with Olivia Miles winning Rookie of the Month in the month of May. Cass, what a pleasant surprise Minnesota has been up until this point.
I am genuinely surprised, but I do want to point out that in that exact same podcast, we said, like, if Cheryl Reeve does well with this team, we wouldn't be surprised, because this is now however many years that she has done this. It is impressive every single time. It is clearly the defensive side of the ball that is leading the way here. But man, if you look at their stat numbers, they lead in a bunch of stuff. And Olivia Miles has been absolutely incredible for them. One interesting stat for her, should her current averages continue throughout the season, she would join Candace Parker, Caitlin Clark, Satu Sabli, and Sabrina Ionescu, becoming the fifth player with at least 17 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and 1 steal per game. And she's one of the most efficient. She's hitting 52% from the field right now. Like, she is doing whatever she wants. And, you know, we mentioned Kareem. He wrote a story on how the Lynx were doing. And veteran players are saying, like, yes, this is largely, you know, because of Olivia. She's not just a rookie coming off our bench. She's one of the key players for this team. It's incredible what they've done to lead the pack at the quarterway mark.
She broke Caitlin Clark's rookie record with 8 three-pointers the other night against Golden State. We talked about this with Kareem, but Olivia Miles just has that thing that you can't coach and you can't teach, of just, she's just ready for the moment. That she didn't need a ramping up period necessarily in the WNBA. We've seen a few young players in the past do that. I think Paige Beckers is a great example of that as well, as players that just got it. Sonny Citron is another one of those players last year. They came into the league and they just got it. Things clicked for them right away. And you look at Minnesota, leads the league in offense, leads the league in defense, leads the league in field goal percentage, second in the league in steals, third in the league in blocks. I mean, like, one thing about Cheryl Reeve coach teams, like, they're going to play some defense. And this Minnesota team is so good defensively, but they're supplementing it with offensive scoring as well. And they're doing it without Nafisa Collier. Like, they're doing all of these things. They look like the best team in the league. They're playing like the best team in the league. And they're doing it without their MVP. They're doing it without one of the best players in the league. And it's scary to think about when they do get Fee back, who's beating this team?
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see when they do get her back. You know, kind of the projections were sometime in June. Looking at the calendar, we're in June. Cheryl Reeve was asked about this Monday, I believe, at their practice, and she just left it as Fee is in the building rehabbing. That seems to be all we're going to get out of that camp, but it would be interesting to know when she's on track to return. I don't think they're going to have a problem seamlessly fitting her back into this team, but whoa, imagine being the league leading team and you get back the MVP runner up at midseason. Like, it's almost the flip of what happened last year where they were doing so well. They were the team that didn't have injury trouble almost at all. They had a little bit, but not a ton. And then the end of their season kind of partly goes off the rails because of injuries. Like, maybe this is the time they get it back. How fascinating would that be? Like, they run back their team to try and get back to the finals, fall short, and then they have this collection of talent that everyone's like, I don't know, Cheryl, and they win it all.
And Cheryl Reeve, we trust. And Dawn Staley, we trust.
She's shown
and
it.
Sandy Brondello, we trust. And Cheryl Reeve, we trust. We're trusting a whole lot of people, but they have earned it. That's the benefit of the doubt that I think all of those coaches have earned. Cheryl Reeve is absolutely positively no different. But another team that I think has been a pleasant surprise, and we did expect this team to be better. They showed us that in the offseason, that they were serious about winning more games this year. And that's the Dallas Wings. The Dallas Wings now currently sit at fourth in the standings at 7-3. This Dallas Wings team, Cass, has been really impressive, especially coming off of having back-to-back number one overall picks. They were at the bottom of the league last year. Was disappointing of the way that Paige Beckers was able to kind of assimilate herself into this team. You know, you bring in this past offseason Alana Smith and Jessica Shepherd. You bring in players that have history of playing a lot of basketball together, especially at the college level. Obviously, we saw that with the drafting of AZ Fudd, but this Dallas Wings team just seems to be clicking.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a bunch of stats that kind of stuck out to me, kind of getting back into the grind of the WNBA being in softball. But as I was thinking about it over the past 24 hours, I really think a lot of it has to do with Jose Fernandez. You know, I think back to him meeting with the media before that season opener in Indiana, and he was just, he's like, I have expectations of this team. Like, we're not going to talk about these little kind of, you know, participation trophy type wins. Like, we're here to win. There's nothing else that matters. And that's clearly what has become. And I don't want to overlook that, yes, they bring in the talent to do it. AZ Fudd has already kind of ascended into a starter spot. Paige Beckers is exactly who we thought she was. Jessica Shepherd is having a career year there. But when you actually have that type of leadership where I think you come in and just say, like, I don't care what happened last year. I don't care that you've been in the dumps for like 10 years, like since you came here almost. Like, we're here to win. This is what I expect. This is what we're going to do. And so far, it is absolutely working.
Yeah, it's absolutely working. And I think there's a certain kind of grace period that you get whenever you are as bad as the Dallas Wings were over the last couple of years. But it's kind of like the fever approach, right? When you had Aaliyah Boston and Caitlin Clark and the number one overall pick in back-to-back years, like at a certain point, you have to start delivering. At a certain point, those picks have to start paying dividends. At a certain point, you have to invest into your number one overall picks. You can't just bring those players in and say, okay, go fix our franchise. No, like you need to put veteran players around those young players. You have to put the right coach around those young players to help them assimilate and acclimate into the WNBA level. And once they get there, turning that into actual wins, turning that into postseason appearances. And the Dallas Wings have done an absolutely great job at that. Now, the New York Liberty have been kind of a fascinating case study so far this season. You know, the Liberty lost 3 games in a row, and then they turned that around, and they've now won 5 straight games in a row. And 2 of those were against Phoenix, not a very great team. One of those is against Connecticut, also not a great team. But still, I mean, you get credit for beating the good teams. You also get credit for beating the bad teams, too. The Liberty are not at full strength either. Sabrina Ionescu's still been out with that back tightness, which has been strange that we haven't seen Sabrina really much at all this entire season. So, I mean, New York still has some injury question marks, but still, the Liberty have been able to kind of keep this ship on the straight and narrow, now sitting at 8-4 and one of the top teams in the league.
Talent-wise, I mean, one of the best and the only team to beat the Aces in the playoffs the last 4 years. Like, that's a long time, and that goes a long way when you still have most of your talent back. Chris DeMarco kind of called them funky lineups, but they've had 5 different lineups throughout these games, and that's not tinkering. That's out of necessity. And I know for the most part, you know, it's like an hour before game time, you're figuring out who's available and who's not. Again, like, not easy. I think I've said it on this podcast before, but I kind of feel like it's a joke, but they kind of sold their souls to win that championship. And now it's just like injuries all the time.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can get everyone back and finally going. But this past Friday was the first time that they had everyone available in practice. That is wild. We are one month into the season, and we had 2 weeks of training camp before that. Like, not great.
That's insane. And it's, yeah, there's 2 different ways to look at it. It's, they've had all of these injuries. What's going on? When are you going to have this core back together? At what point are we going to see what this Liberty team is and looks like at full strength? And then on the other side, it's, oh, they've been dealing with all of these injuries. To your point, the first time that they've had everyone all together in practice, yet they're still the top spot in the Eastern Division. And it looks like they are about to go to the, I mean, if all things stand pat, obviously we still have a lot of basketball left to be played. But if the Commissioner's Cup ended right now, they would be heading to the Commissioner's Cup final. So, you know, it's credit to that team, credit to the talent that they have on that team, credit to a lot of the veteran talent they have on that team for being able to still find ways to win. But also on the other side, it's at what point do these injuries, if the injury bug continues to bite, at what point is it just too much for any team, no matter how much talent you have, how much is it just too much to deal with?
Yeah, and I think we're going to see that, you know, pretty soon. Like, this, I see this as Sabrina's team. She was their first number one overall pick in 2020. To your point earlier about Dallas and Indiana, they bring in veterans to build around her with Sandy Brondello. They're going for gold here. They win the championship. But Sabrina has been out with a back injury. They're calling it soreness, I think, is technically. They've been a little not clear about what exactly is going on. Sabrina did talk to reporters on Thursday or Friday, I think it was, and just said after the single game she played in, because she had an ankle injury to start the season, it was pretty evident that I needed to get the treatment, take some time to make sure it feels good. If it is soreness, that's kind of largely looked at as 2 to 4 weeks. So you're looking at maybe a month, obviously not something you want to toy with. Who knows if it's longer, if it is a disc injury, and I am not saying it is, that's 4 to 6 weeks. But she could be out a while, it seems like, with an injury that they're kind of playing fast and loose with details on. And certainly her being, you know, the lead guard there and the key asset to this team and the way she's developed since she came into the league, to not have her is going to start, I think, maybe wearing on them. I guess the flip side is you get some reps for some other people who then build up your bench. But not having Sabrina is tough.
Yeah. And now is the time to get the rest, to get the treatment. Now is the time not to push it, because for a couple of reasons, it's June. It's early. And also because they're still finding ways to win games. And sure, there are some uncharacteristic losses in there that the Liberty have suffered, that if you just looked at things through a microscope, those are games that they should have won. But they're still finding ways to win games without her. So you don't really feel the overwhelming need to rush her back if she's not feeling 100%. Like, you have the kind of players like a Sabrina in Minnesota, like a Nafisa Collier, to get you through the grind of the postseason, to win you championships. You don't necessarily need Sabrina for, you know, a random Tuesday or Wednesday game in June. But you would want to get this core together. Because while, you know, I don't expect Sabrina or Fee or any of these big time superstars that have lost, you know, or been missed a significant period of time due to injury, you wouldn't expect a super long ramping up period. But this is still a unit of five players together that have to have that chemistry, that have to kind of learn each other. So that doesn't just, you don't just snap your fingers. That just doesn't happen overnight. That takes time.
Yeah, it's such a good point. And I think it's part of what we saw the last year where they didn't have a lot of time on the court together. You know, it is just June. I don't disagree with anything you said, but it also gets late quick.
Gets late quick. No doubt. Those are some good surprises, some happy surprises that we have seen so far in the W just based off of our preseason expectations. But there have been some teams that have maybe not been the best surprises, maybe teams that we expected a whole lot more from at this point in the season. I think we have to start with the Phoenix Mercury when we talk about that conversation. Yes, we know they're coming into this conversation on a 2-game win streak, which is great, but that's also coming off of the heels of losing, what, 6 of their last 7, whatever the number is. The Phoenix Mercury have been at the bottom of the league. And we're talking about a team that wasn't that long ago they were in the WNBA Finals. Was not that long ago they were competing for a championship. Yes, you lose Satu Sabli. No team in the W loses Satu and gets better. But Kaz, I did not expect a free fall this dramatic from the Phoenix Mercury.
I don't know. I wasn't expecting much from them. I think, but to your point, like, it's tough because we all talked about this. You let Satu go. This is someone that you brought in to create your big three, to provide offense around Alyssa Thomas and allow AT to do what she does best, to be the MVP caliber player that she was in Connecticut. You let Satu go for nothing. You don't even core her. And that's kind of something that Satu is still kind of talking about. This was best for her to move on to New York. But you don't backfill her necessarily with anyone to provide what she did. And I don't think, you know, credit to their international scouting department. They've brought in a lot of players, especially last year, who were able to fill those roles of, you know, a typical role player you would think about and be able to play around AT and maximize her talents to reach the finals. And same with Kalia Copper and Satu Sabli. But you didn't bring in anybody else to really maximize that. And I think teams are starting to begin to figure them out as well.
Yeah, I hear you on like losing Satu. Yes, that's a massive amount of production from your team last year. But it seemed with Ka Copper and Alyssa Thomas shouldn't be this bad. Losing this many games. So yeah, you lose a massive part of your team and a massive amount of production, but like, we're still talking about Alyssa Thomas, who's the queen of triple doubles. We're still talking about Ka Copper, who's averaging, what, like close to 20 points a game. So the Phoenix Mercury clearly have been disappointing at this point in the season. So have the Sparks. Cass, have you seen the movie Cinderella Story?
Yeah, of course.
Obviously, it's a classic. Thank you. Jason Fitzmick, co-host of Yahoo Sports Daily, has not.
Of course he hasn't. Come on, Fitz.
Which is rude. He's missing out on the classics. Rude. But you know that scene when she's like, waiting for you is like waiting for rain in this drought. Useless and disappointing. It's kind of how I feel about the Sparks defense.
Oh, my God.
We've been waiting for this defense to get better. We talked about this in our season preview pod.
I know.
Like, if the Sparks defense is just average, like just doesn't have to be best in the league, doesn't have to be top 3, doesn't have to be top 5, just needs to be like middle of the road, improved a little bit, and this team could be a legitimate championship contender. Yet it's still not there. Like, they are at the top of the league in every single offensive statistic there possibly could be, but the defense is still such a glaring hole.
It absolutely is. Their defensive rating is 111.8, the worst in the league by 2 entire points. Worse than the Connecticut Sun, which is saying a lot because the Sun have sat at the bottom for quite a while now. man, just like, just play a little defense, guys. Like, just a little bit. Like,
just a little bit.
You cannot rely on outscoring your opponents all of the time, or like rely on it coming down to final baskets. Aren't you going to run out of plays at some point, like last game-winning plays? I think at least, I guess, with the defensive side of the ball, like, you can find ways to improve that. You can improve chemistry. You know, Kelsey Plum has talked about this again. She's having another incredible offensive season, but certainly defense a lot of time comes down to pride and work and putting in the work and communication. And so I think those things are things that can be improved upon. But a season and a quarter into this with different personnel now, like, defense just seems to be an afterthought constantly, even considering they had a good defensive game against, I think it was Portland the other night.
I was just looking through their schedule quickly. They've in how many games? 1, 2, 3, 4. They have now given up more than 100 points in 4 of their 11 games so far. That is unacceptable. Now,
that works in the MNBA.
What'd you say?
So that works in the MNBA, yeah, not here.
That works in the MNBA. Like, I heard, so this is Tuesday, we had game 3 of the MNBA finals last night, and I heard, yeah, like, some Spurs people talking about how it was, like, one of the Spurs' best defensive games of the postseason, and the Knicks scored 105 points. I'm like, are you crazy? They're like, two totally different games here. Getting us back on track, though. You mentioned Kelsey, yes, Plum. Of course, she's, yes, the leader in that locker room. She spoke with the media just a couple of days ago and kind of shed some light on maybe what's going on behind the scenes in LA. This was Kelsey Plum.
It's about being a professional. You know, you show up every night and you do your job. So that's what we need to do moving forward every night. Like, and I get it, you make mistakes and everything, but it's really more just about, like, a pride. I mean, I'm not gonna speak for anyone else, but when you have the worst defensive rating of all time in the W, I mean, you tell me.
Kasson Kelsey says it's about being a professional. Yeah. That seems like something that you don't just say willy-nilly. What does that mean to you? Like, what do you take away from Kelsey Plum saying this team needs to be more professional, essentially?
Yeah, she's the veteran leader there. You know, she was their big free agent signing 2 off seasons ago. She wanted this challenge to be somewhere new. It tells me that there are issues in the locker room, or she has issues with other people on the team, maybe not putting in the work that she feels like they should, or at least not putting in the effort that she feels like they should. Like, there's a little bit of a lapse there between the work being put in and what should be done about it. And I think, you know, coming from an organization like the Aces, she spent so much time there under Bill Laimbeer and Becky Hammon. There are expectations and everyone lives up to them. And you can see on those teams, you know, even an end of the bench player who has to come in the finals, you know, in a starting role or a lead reserve role suddenly because of injuries, they play to that standard, to that expectation. There are, to our point about Jose Fernandez, there are no excuses. Right. Kelsey Plum comes from that line, and she's bringing that to the Sparks. There can't be excuses. There can't be lapses. Like, everyone needs to do what they are supposed to do if this team is going to succeed at all.
Like, playing offense is sexy. Like, that's fun.
Yeah.
Scoring points is, you know, what gets you on SportsCenter top 10. It's the thing that sells tickets. Like, we are all hungry for offense. Defense is hard. Defense, mm-hmm, is physical. Defense is something that you have to actively choose to do. Like, playing defense is a choice. So if that's the plaguing problem for this team, and we knew it was going to be, and it was last season, like, this isn't that something that's new that's just popped up in the last couple of games. Yeah, that does start to sound like a foundational problem of this team. Not only is it, you know, not having, you know, defensive players of the year on your roster, it's about, do you want to play defense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, it is a want. You hear this, yeah, all the time, right? Like, Raven Johnson talks about it. Everyone talks about it. Yeah. There needs to be maybe, like, a team meeting where let's play some defense, guys. Like, look at what we could be if we play defense.
Yeah. And good on Kelsey Plum for calling her team out. I know that can't be easy. I know that's probably not the most comfortable thing in the world, is to call your team and your locker room out publicly. But we saw Jose Fernandez do that at the beginning of the season, right? Yeah. And we were like, whoa, 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 is it way too early to do that? But then we've seen the Wings kind of, you know, come alive. It was like a defibrillator that just kind of just sent a shockwave through that entire team. We saw Becky Hammon do it several times in Vegas last year. And then that team just all of a sudden just kind of turned course. So if you're going to call a team out, a team, I think, with good culture, a team that is receptive to coaching and feedback, they're going to hear that and say, you know what? You're right. Like, we do need to be better. We do need to be professionals. We do need to start making the active choice to play defensively. And if you don't have a good culture, and then your team's just going to falter. But, you know, we'll see how this Sparks team responds to a start to the season that is slower than we thought they would be. Now, look, they're 5-6. They just beat the Fire the other night. They snapped a 3-game losing streak, but still, they have not ultimately fixed what has been, you know, plaguing this team, and that is playing better defense. Last thing we're going to talk about, I think, has been kind of a fascinating case study with two players that I absolutely love, and Sonia Citron and Kikiria Finn. But that's the Washington Mystics. They're a team that is so incredibly young. Like, their average age is what, like 21, 22? Like, you have all of these first and second year players. That they're such a young and green team. But I think that maybe we didn't really know exactly what to expect from the Washington Mystics. But standing at 4-6 right now, it feels a little bit lower than maybe what I would have expected early from this Mystics team.
Yeah, it feels like they came out so strong last year and had such good seasons. You know, Sonia Citron was, I think, for a lot of people, a little bit of a surprise, just the incredible level of success she had. Mm-hmm. You know, a player like Kikiria Finn, incredible level of success. And now you have to come out and back that up. You don't have a ton of veteran leadership showing you how to do it. And you also have now another influx of rookies. Mm-hmm. I'm always big on having veteran leadership, especially when you have these young players. I wonder if that's part of it, but certainly they've taken a little bit of a setback, at least at this point in the season, and have struggled at times to get wins, you know? But they also had that incredible comeback against Indiana last night, Monday night. They lose it because they let Caitlin Clark loose to hit a deep three-pointer. She was in absurdly wide open. It was like driving on the three-way without a car. Like, wild.
Of all people to leave.
Of all people.
Wide open in the final few seconds of that game. It was a beautiful shot. And it was great to see. Yeah, I mean, that's like what Caitlin Clark does best. And it was really great to kind of see her. She's had a down shooting games the past couple of games. She shot sub 30% from the field in three of her last four games. Has not been great. So to kind of see her get her lick back a little bit, to see the Fever get some positive PR after the past couple of weeks that they've had, it has been nice to see. Like, can we just stop talking about Stephanie White yelling Caitlin Clark, please, for the love of God. So that was kind of great to see, but tough to see for a young Mystics team that beating that Fever team probably would have paid dividends. But that hasn't been the only kind of newsy little piece about the Washington Mystics. If I want to go back two games ago, at least as of where things stand right now, they got absolutely blown out 109-77 by the Atlanta Dream. The Dream were the better team, and it wasn't even close that day. But officiating was widely criticized after that game. The Dream took 41 free throws to Washington's 27. Sidney Johnson, their head coach, came out on the court at one point in that game, and he was getting after the refs. And there were several assistant coaches that came off the bench to kind of hold him back. Kikiria Finn even at one point came out and was like, hey, it's okay, it's okay. Like, come back, come back. And Sidney Johnson just continued to kind of give the refs a little bit of a piece of his mind. Ultimately, he was escorted off the court by police officers. What did you make of all of that?
Tensions run high. I think he seemed to want to kind of keep making his point even after it. I mean, I would probably do the same, to be honest, if I were thrown, like, okay, well, I'm still going to talk your ear off about how terrible I think you're doing at whatever you're doing. Certainly, like, police coming onto the court makes it look really bad. But I thought it was interesting what he said afterward. I don't like that he kind of didn't want to talk about what upset him about that particular play. I think if you're going to get thrown out and you're going to create that type of scene, like, tell us what made you so angry.
Yeah. 'Cause
that's kind of ridiculous. But also, you know, he was asked, like, did you feel like you needed to have the ejection to advocate for this team? Because sometimes we talk about that, right? And like that happened in the finals last year with Nate Tibbetts. Like, can you get your team going in some way? And he said, I'll just say, well, he said he's not a big proponent of that. And then he said, I'll just say respectfully, when you come to a game, you shouldn't have to lobby and advocate. Coaches coach, players play, officials officiate. It shouldn't be swayed one way or the other because anybody's in anyone's ear. I'm not a big proponent of that thinking. Despite what you saw today, that's my general approach. Which, I mean, kudos to him. Do I think it should happen that way either? No. But the reality is it does. Exactly. Right. But does it? Yes.
Like, it's admirable to have that approach. Because everything he's saying is, in a perfect world, how things would be.
Right.
But that's unfortunately not how not how things are. If you just read a tweet or a headline of what happened, you probably had this vision in your brain of what it was, and you're like, oh my God, that's great. It was, he was angry, he was pissed off, he was fed up, and I get it. The officiating in that game was incredibly inconsistent. And I think that's all any of us can ask for is, look, if you want to swallow the whistle, swallow the whistle. If you want to call everything, call everything. Just be consistent through the entirety of four quarters. Call it the same on both sides. Call it the same in both halves. Just be consistent with the officiating. And I think that was maybe Sidney Johnson's biggest, you know, sticking point with how the game was officiated. He was pissed off. He was angry. He wanted the refs to know that he was angry. He was advocating for his team. Ultimately, he was escorted off the court. No, like, further suspension was necessary. No further discussion, I think, was necessary. Coaches, players, everybody, to your point, tensions run high. They're passionate. They're competitors. They want to win. That was it. That was that. But if you want to posture for the refs in front of a microphone, like, be my guest. We wouldn't be the first one. Probably won't be the last.
No.
All right, we'll continue our conversation coming up next. A couple of things that happened in the W that deserve some shouting out here on Hoops 360. All right, Cass, we had some fun things happen in the W. You want to give a shout out, a nice little spotlight of the week. First and foremost, Asia Wilson continues to rewrite the history books and just continues to break our brains with what she does on any given night. She becomes the first player, the fastest player, rather, in WNBA history to reach 6,000 career points. She has just passed the GOAT, Diana Taurasi, after her 34-point game against the Seattle Storm. Cass, I never want to take Asia Wilson for granted. I never want to take the greatness of what she does, who she is, what she's accomplished in this league, and what she has left to accomplish in this league, and just say, oh, well, that's just what Asia Wilson does. Even though it is what she does, we always have to cherish the moments that we have watching Asia Wilson play this sport.
Absolutely. I mean, she leads the league in scoring again. She's almost averaging a double-double. I saw someone say, and I thought this was funny, that like they were listing basically all the ways that Asia Wilson is amazing. And one of the ones they included was like when her boyfriend breaks the NBA scoring record, people are asking Asia questions.
Right. We were actually talking about that on Yahoo Sports Daily today, talking about the Miami Heat, and you know, my co-host brought up Bam Adebayo. I was like, no, say his name correctly. His name is Asia Wilson's boyfriend. Okay,
no, it's Asia's favorite Olympian from out of town. Let's go all the way
Olympian
back.
Olympian from out of town. Get it right, okay? Say his name correctly. But yeah, she is just absolutely incredible. And I don't think there's enough waxing poetic that we can do to, you know, adequately and appropriately describe exactly what Asia Wilson has done for this game. Another little shout out to Jonquil Jones, whose jersey was retired by the Connecticut Sun. They had a nice little ceremony when the Liberty played the Connecticut Sun the other night, and really cool. I mean, like, Jonquil Jones had such a successful career with Connecticut. She went to two WNBA finals with Connecticut. She was WNBA MVP in 2021 with Connecticut, most improved player in 2017, sixth woman of the year in 2018. I mean, she had so many great years as a team with Connecticut, and herself making a name for herself in this league wearing a Connecticut Sun uniform. So great to see her get her flowers and also kind of saying a sweet little goodbye to the Connecticut Sun.
Yeah, that was a special time in Connecticut with JJ and Breonna Jones and just the incredible talent they had, you know, the winningest team over like a 6-year period, and couldn't break through for a title. Like, injuries really derailed a couple of those seasons led by Kurt Miller, and a tough break. You have to wonder, you don't want to like revise history, but you have to wonder what today looks like if they win one of those titles.
Definitely. It is crazy to think, like, would the Connecticut Sun still be in Connecticut had they won a championship? It's a fascinating and kind of heartbreaking thought, but championships change everything.
This changes included. Everything. Changes if like a player stays and if they go, and what a franchise does and how many fans you have and who cares about the team being there. And again, not the podcast for that at the moment, but it is interesting.
It is. It is fascinating to think about. It is, absolutely. So congratulations to both Asia and to Jonquil Jones. A couple of games to keep an eye on as we look ahead to the rest of the week. Today, Tuesday night, we've got a battle of the number one overall pick versus the number two overall pick, AZ Fudd versus Olivia Miles, Wings Lynx at 8 o'clock Eastern time. Cass, are you buying into any of this discussion that the Lynx made a mistake, that it should, or excuse me, the Wings made a mistake, that it should have been Olivia Miles as the number one overall pick?
This is one of my like frustrating things about sports, and I get it. Like, you want to be the number one. Everyone wants to be number one. Everyone wants to be number one. But don't you care if you actually fit into what that team is doing, especially in the WNBA where like it matters? So no, I think AZ should have gone to Dallas. It makes sense. I think Olivia should have gone to Minnesota. It makes sense. This is going to be a fun game. Maybe we will get fun games for many years between them. Like, no.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome, Caroline.
Because it's so easy, right? It's so easy to be like, oh, this player is scoring more points than that player, so that team made a mistake in not drafting a player that scores more points. Like, okay, great. Let's peel back the layers on that a little bit. Olivia Miles is a point guard, okay? Dallas has a pretty good point guard. Dallas has a pretty good point guard who won a lot of games with the player who did go number one overall in college. They have that chemistry. They have that relationship already built up. Like, I'm sure this discussion is not going to bed anytime soon, and I'm sure the outcome of tonight could only like add gasoline onto the fire. But like, let's use our brains just a little bit, people. Like, let's just think about this a little bit. Let's peel back the layers on this just a little bit.
Would she necessarily be scoring that many points with the other team?
That's the question. Would Olivia Miles be averaging 20-whatever points in Dallas? Probably not. Would we be having the same conversation about Olivia Miles and Paige Bueckers that we had about Paige Bueckers and Rika Ogunbowale last year? Like, maybe. Like, would we be talking about, like, how do all of these pieces fit together? We could have been. I'm not having that conversation, though, about AZ and Paige and how those two fit together. Will we feel like Dallas made a mistake 10 years from now if Olivia Miles wins 10 championships in 10 years with Minnesota? Maybe, but we'll cross that bridge if we ever get to it. Who knows? Anything can happen. All right, on Thursday, we've got Liberty and the Dream. Nice little matchup there as we go throughout to the rest of Commissioner Cup play. And then on Saturday, we've got Lynx and Aces. I love this matchup. The number one team in the league right now versus the reigning champion Las Vegas Aces. What are you watching for in that one, Cass?
Well, I'm actually watching the Commissioner's Cup standings in both of these because I think they could be the ones to determine the winners. And the interesting thing about the Commissioner's Cup that we've long talked about is it usually gives us a look at who's going to make the finals. I also think it's really interesting that over the 5-6 years that we've done this, the team that makes its debut for the last couple of years in the Commissioner's Cup wins, and then they come back the next year and they lose, and then they haven't made it since. So do we keep that up, or do the Aces and the Liberty maybe make it again?
And it's also been a pretty good omen for the WNBA finals. It is kind of maybe a peek behind the curtain of who could potentially get there. Now, last year, Minnesota season derailed by injury, and I think that's a fair, you know, reason to look at why the Lynx ultimately didn't get there. But if you look over the course of the Commissioner's Cup, that is a positive sign for what the rest of your season might look like. Of course, you know, knock on wood, barring injury. These are fascinating matchups to keep an eye on over the next couple of days. And we will keep you updated with all of the latest, the biggest stories and our, you know, hottest takes and biggest takeaways from all of these matchups coming up next week on Hoops 360. She's Cassandra Negley. I'm Caroline Fenton. We'll see you next week.